What is happening? Welcome to another episode of the Plus Bitch Podcast. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 6th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. We have AJ Smith Shaver. Is he a legend or is he a myth? Shaver. Well, he went 8 innings and 0 runs yesterday. 1 hit, 4 walks, and 5 Ks against the Reds, I should note. He got the win, 99 pitches. This was a game that was, this was so strange, and I actually talked to Kyle Bland after it because I still don't quite understand. On the performance side, whatever. It was 4 seamers down the middle of the plate, and the Reds were like, I don't know what this is, and they just kind of rolled over. While all of his secondaries, the splitter and the curve were sub 45% strikes, like 44% on the splitter and then 42 on the curve. Like, this fastball can be very good if he actually locates it upstairs. He has 16 inches of vert, which actually is dead zone-y, and it is 7 feet of extension around like 94, 95, actually more like 95 for AJ Smith-Shaver. Great, but you can't really just get away with that down the middle of the plate unless you have something else really. And what's so strange about Mr. Smith-Shaver and why I talked to Kyle Bland is that the strike zone plot of this, or actually the movement plot, I really should say, is absurdly weird. And even watching it, the splitter did not feel like a splitter. And let me explain. This is what, if you're watching on YouTube right now, this is what I see. These are the splitters that are the same vert as the four seamer. There's like a clump of them that have no horizontal movement and are just having the same vert, but they've come in at like 81 to 86, maybe there's one at 87, and then there's another clump with proper vert that has some drop to it. It makes no sense. Like, it's almost like it's a knuckler, and at first we're like, oh, okay, maybe this is like a cutter, this is a something along those lines, or the slider, because it's really just one just hanging out, one slider, but it had sub 1,000 RPM. So I'm thinking that this is kind of like the Fosh ball a little bit, that just never quite gets that drop to it and just kind of floats up there. It was terrible. I mean, I really can't express that enough. It was bad and not a good splitter. It was just strange. It was almost like a knuckler. I don't know what's going on with that one. I have no idea. It's so weird to see a splitter have, in some cases, more vert, less drop than a four-seam, like 17 inches of vert on a splitter. Just think about that for a second. Okay. So moving forward with AJ Smith-Shaver, not really the biggest fan of chasing this moving forward. He does have a decent schedule, though. The next one for AJ Smith-Shaver is the Pirates, and then it's the Nationals. The Pirates, we are saying, is a tier two offense, according to PLBot, which is, I know, very strange. They have been actually kind of good. It makes a little bit of sense there. That's the one area I'm probably going to disagree with them a little bit. Maybe also with the Angels as well being up there. It's based on process plus the skills, less so the results. So it might actually be missing a lot of things that we are not. So do what you want there. But it is the Nationals, after which they certainly agree, PLBot, that it is a tier five. So the lowest tier, you definitely want to stream that one. So think about that. It's a good situation. He still has adjustments to make, AJ Smith-Shaver. This is not your breakout pitcher of the year. Carlos Rodon is looking like an ace, honestly. 6.2 innings of 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. The strikeouts are lower than you'd expect. He would have gotten a win if it weren't for Devin Williams completely falling apart once again for the Yankees. But it's really cool to see the one seamers. That is the sinker, featured 7 times, 6 of them for strikes. I think there's a much more of a well-rounded package in that arsenal for Carlos Rodon this year. It's great. Cole Reagans, ace is going to ace. 17 whiffs, 33% CSW for a golden goal. Not too many amazing starts yesterday, so I understand the CSW, 33% being the highest. There was a comment about the lower velocity on Reagans. Yeah, it did get lower to like 94, 93 almost by the endish. But keep in mind, when a guy sits 95, which Reagans did here, 96, yeah, you're going to have like 2 ticks underneath. You should, as kind of the minimum as it goes on. So that's okay. The changeup and the four-seamer did a Blake Snell blueprint against right-handers. It was just so good. We have Jack Dreyer, you know, who I didn't even know existed until like a week ago, against the Marlins as the opener. And then Ben Kasperis came in as we expected. He went 4 innings of 1 earned run, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts. He got the win, 70 pitches. This works. This is cool. This was against the Marlins. So keep in mind that it's not always going to be such a lovely schedule for Ben Kasparyas when he does get these opportunities. It is the Diamondbacks next, and you might not want to go for that because of that matchup. At the same time, I think I'm going to go for it. I think he is a solid play for two reasons. One, he is getting more stretched out and will likely continue to have an opener, which means a higher chance for that win. But two, he does have just generally very good stuff. And I had a really good discussion with Eric Samulski on the Corner podcast that came out late last night, I know, about how Kasparyas does at times feel like he is more of a stuffist. That is, we see like the stuff numbers of the 92 mile per hour cutter and the 87 mile per hour slider and a 96 plus four seamer with good vert on it. But he still needs to actually like pitch and hit his spots. And Kasparyas is not one of those, hey, here's the glove, do whatever you want, let the pitches move, right? Like Lance McCullers is more like that. I'm Matt Brash, that kind of thing. Joe Boyle, whatever. But Kasparyas isn't that. And I actually do think there is an approach here that really works with just general Blake Snell blueprint, four seamers up end, cutters and sliders, arm side, glove side rather. And we actually did see some cool curveballs down and away to lefties. I think that can be more helpful against lefties as well. I wish there was a sinker for right-handers because nothing is glove side with him, or arm side rather. Everything is going glove side. And I wish there was just one thing that went the other direction to kind of help and confuse batters a little bit more instead of just following the diagonal. From four-seamer down to cutter, down to slider, and then underneath for curves. But Kasparyas is in a really good situation. Glasnow should be out for some time. Snell is also out. There's Gonsolin probably taking that in the meantime. But honestly, we could get to a situation where between Kasparyas, May, and Gonsolin, whoever isn't performing well will get the axe, and it's not a guarantee that it would be Kasparyas. So I'm cool running with this. As you saw from the list yesterday, there are fewer necessities for your team now off the wire than usual. There's always these lulls that happen inside the season, inside of April. There's a ton of guys to go and chase. And usually around this time in May, we start to shift away from a lot of those. We start to realize who's working, who's not. And that means all of a sudden that those guys aren't replaced yet. We are getting a new wave of either improvements and tweaks that we can believe in, or we haven't seen major prospects come up yet. We're going to see that soon. So we're going to see like Zebby soon. We're going to see Bubba Chandler soon. We're going to see maybe some Jace Petty, but some Andrew Painter. We just saw Blade Tidwell as well. We saw Gunnar Hoglund. Like it's going to start happening there. While we also are going to see things like Kyle Harrison maybe in Birdsong, I don't know. Things are going to shift around a bit. So we're in this weird moment where there aren't many other good options to go after, so you might as well just chase something like Kasparyas in the meantime. You have Tobias Myers against the Astros. 5.1 innings of 1 earned run, 6 at 0 walks, and 2 strikeouts. That's a gold star, because I really didn't expect Tobias Myers to have a really good one here. And this is against the Astros. Good job. You only have 2 strikeouts, and the four-seamer is the only thing that's really working. 37% CSW. The cutter and the slider didn't really do a whole lot over the plate. I'm not really interested in this with Myers. I will always tell you that the changeup is the ticket to actually being a very, very reliable starter in fantasy. Until then, it's more about nailing the four-seamer locations and hoping that the other pitches are good enough. You have Griffin Canning against the Diamondbacks. And I was mentioning before with Canning, before on the stream, Griffin Canning is very interesting because people were saying, hey, Nick, you got to add Griffin Canning. You got to push him up further. He's had such a good run, and he deserves more respect, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So a few things on this. Yes, I'm surprised yesterday that he went 5 innings, 1 run against the Diamondbacks. 6 strikeouts, awesome. 7 base runners, 6 hits, 1 walk. So last 4 games before this, he got 4 straight wins. Ooh, amazing. Don't really care. Why? One game this year at 6 innings. 2, when I do the list, as you guys know, it's forward thinking as much as possible. And it can be very easy, and I've done it before, of just looking at the past and saying, well, that's great, so I'm going to rank him up because it's as if like I'm pre-ranking or giving respect for what he's done. But really, what I'm doing, yeah, is just saying, okay, that's information, but I'm just trying to decide what is going to happen in the future, right? And yeah, I said Griffin Canning wasn't worth it on the top 100 yesterday, saying this start against the Diamondbacks and also seeing him going against the Cubs next. And I'm like, I don't want to start Griffin Canning for those. And you say, Nick, come on, 5 innings, 1 run, 6 Ks. Yes, it's also the third straight start of Griffin Canning having at least a 1.4 whip. He's also, I mean, if you really want to go deep into this, on one hand, like the pitches themselves are the same. Like, I even tried to figure it out exactly of like, cool, this one's getting more whiffs, this one's getting more strikes. Nope. Four-seamer, sinker, four-seamer slider, changeup, pretty much the same. Slightly different ICR, slightly. And obviously fewer home runs, but pretty much the same pitches. And he is getting the slider a little bit more down than he used to last year a little bit, but that's about it. And if you go to the higher level ones, the typical ones, I mean, sometimes it's just that easy. You just look at the hotel, Holy Trinity, equating luck. How is Griffin Canning having this much success? Oh, he used to have a 1.5 homer per nine. That's his career mark, okay? And it's pretty much always been at least 1.2, if not like two or whatever. It's 0.58, right? Duh. Homer fly ball rate is half of what it usually is. And then there's a left on base rate at 85%. There you go. The whip is still bad. Why? Because the hit per nine is still bad, right? He still has like a 300 BABIP or so, because he should, because it's Griffin Canning. He's just been able to finagle around it better. Like, I'm trying to express to you guys that Griffin Canning has always had this ability to do this. It's not like he was just always terrible. It was that he threw changeups and sliders and he got general strikes with them. And then sometimes like batters would get outs with it, or sometimes he would get those whiffs and have those higher put away rates. Great. But he is not this guy. I really can't express that enough. And I'm happy it's on a good roll right now. If you want a Vargas rule it, that's the thing I'm doing wrong, is I'm not giving enough credit for a Vargas rule. Fine. But I saw this week and I was like, the Diamondbacks and the Cubs, I don't want to test that. You know, if you test that with Andrew Heaney, you got burned, right? Like, I don't want to do that. So good luck. You guys do what you want to do with Griffin Canning. Yell at me all you want. I don't care. I will point to the thing that is like, Griffin Canning is doing this. And anytime that I get comments on either WordPress or on Twitter, Reddit, wherever it is, all I'm looking for, and you guys should know this by now, I'm looking for you telling me, what is it about his pitch mix is different? What is it that he's throwing differently that I've missed, that I haven't talked about? It can't be the results. It can't be like he's not good because Gavin Williams has been terrible, and so thus he needs to be lowered. Come on. Like, talk my language. You know my language by now. I've given you a million plus words at this point. Like, more. You know what I need to be convinced. Work with me. That's all. I want to be wrong. I want to be proven those things. All right, I got 20 million more things to talk about, but I think that was an easy one. Matthew Boyd. Oh, this is kind of interesting. And we got Landon Roop, and we got Shane Smith, and we got more to talk about. We're going to talk about all of them after this break. I see also in the comments of chat, Soto C says, hey, Griffin Canning is a textbook Vargas rule. And I actually think that's a really fun conversation. I'm not going to extend too much here, but Vargas rule to me is when a pitcher is pitching at a level that is not what they normally do. And it's not necessarily luck-based. It's just, oh man, Andrew Heaney actually maybe hit his command in a good way. Or like, actually, best example is Jose Quintana. When he has his rhythm of command, that's really good. And that's a Vargas rule. And then when that command goes away, that's when you move on. That's kind of what I think of with the Vargas rule. It's why you normally see it with Tobies, where they are a major leaguer for a reason. Their approach speaks to good command equals outs and getting through games, but they're not always there at that precise level. So when that rhythm is gone, then you move on. That's what I think of when I think of the Vargas rule. And a guy like Griffin Canning is more on the luck side than it is on precision. Now, maybe the slider changes slightly is enough for that. I don't think so. But yeah, I do understand it being a Vargas rule. But like, he's just too good. I'm not dropping him. And that makes sense. I mean, that's really the essence of the Vargas rule. Okay, Matthew Boyd is finally having the game that we were waiting for. Six innings, two earned runs, five hits, zero walks, and seven strikeouts. This was against the Giants. He got the win, sure. But it is an easier schedule moving forward for Matthew Boyd. He gets the Mets in town here on Sunday. Oh, man, I should... Do I have time this weekend to jump down to the Cubs? That would be so cool if I do. I would love to see Boyd in town. I'll see if I can do that. I don't think I can. I don't think I have freedom on Saturday or Sunday. But if I do, I'm going to try and do that. Maybe I do on Saturday. That would be really fun. Anyway, long story short, Matthew Boyd is doing well with this changeup now. The slider, not as much, but then again, he only threw against really right-handers yesterday. So I understand why it wasn't as effective as it normally can be. But yeah, Matthew Boyd, in my head, was a potential Holly entering the year. 7 Ks in 6 innings, good ratios, winning ball club. Like, this is the kind of guy that can be that reliable top 50 pitcher. And I keep telling myself every time I do the list, like, I really should put Matthew Boyd in the top 50 ahead of a lot of these, like, frizzles and upside plays and all that kind of stuff. And I don't, because I haven't seen that game where he faces both righties and lefties and then has the changeup and the slider working, right? So I think as it gets warmer out, more home runs go, and that's a bit of a problem and a worry for Boyd. But I am a Boyd boy. Landon Roop. This is a funny one for me because he went 5 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks. Had a lot of unearned runs, had a lot of errors in the field. Not fun for him, but only 5 whiffs. However, I do want to mention this start. I feel like if Roop allowed like 1 or 2 more earned runs, everyone would be calling for my head and would be saying dropping him in leagues. But just because he had like 1 or 2 fewer earned runs, he's held on your teams. And I feel like that is the crux of the issue of decisions and conversation, is it's so heavily dictated by just 1 at-bat or 2 at-bats. That is, man on second in an inning, if that at-bat is an out or if it's a hit, all of a sudden that is your decision for dropping a guy or not. And that sounds so silly, doesn't it? That's one moment. Maybe 1 home run allowed or something like that, right? It's why I focus so much on my, what are they doing? Should this be over the course of a game effective or not? And I still think with Roop, he's throwing strikes now with his sinker, 11 over 30 called strikes in the sinker. He had a lot of good curveballs in this one. I do wish there were more, there's more success with the changeup and the cutter. But yeah, Roop is a good pitcher. And this was against the Cubs. And I don't think he's going to lose his rotation spot. Everyone wants Birdsong and Harrison to get the spot instead. But I'm not a fan of that. So I don't know. That's kind of where I am with Landon Roop. I think that you guys should just be holding on to him. I think that there's going to be other things that change in that rotation, and you should just see this through. There is a bit of a hipster tendency of being just so focused on that curve, but I think the sinker is better than guys who are like the Wasker rule, for example. And I think there's potential in that changeup and cutter over time. Shane Smith finally did something that I've been waiting for. 5 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. For whatever reason, no one cares about the whip. It's 1-6. You guys should. But 91 pitches, and he sat 96. He didn't sit 94. What we normally see is that as he goes through the games, his velocity goes down, he gets fatigued around like 65 pitches, and then he settles in at 94. That means like 92s and 93s after like 60. That wasn't the case here. He fell to 94, and he threw 91 pitches. Great. So the fatigue aspect, I think, is getting alleviated. He's getting the stamina up. He's able to maintain it. I hope that's the case. If he does it again next time, I'm going to feel a lot more confident in that. And then there is another step here. First, you got to get traded out of the White Sox. Wins are going to be hard to find. Fine. But the other aspect is that you need your changeup to be more consistent. This needs to be a 60-65% strike pitch. You can't just get away with the stuff of it and hope that 50% strikes is enough. While the slider is great at times, and also others, it's just too hittable and not really doing enough. So the secondaries need to step up. It was the biggest criticism I had of Shane Smith in spring. The changeup had those moments, but wasn't as consistent. Then we saw it look so good at the beginning of the year, but we still need a little bit more from Shane Smith so that we can get those 6-plus innings of actual dominance and feeling like we get that 6 innings, 1 run, 7-8K game or something, right? Hopefully we get that soon enough. Nick Pivetta against the Yankees, 5 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, and 5 Ks. Everybody is in on Pivetta. It's crazy to me. I don't know. Like, is Nick Pivetta that different from every other year? He's not a sub-2 ERA guy with, like, a .9 whip or something. Like, we know that. You know that. It's been a month. And he's also been in San Diego with generally good matchups. And he's a career ERA over 4. He's never had a season under 4. Home runs are going to find him. I can't express that enough. So, yeah. This was actually not even that good of an outing. His 4-seamer was upstairs, and that's fun. But the curve and the cutter and the sweeper are all, like, upstairs too much or way over the plate. Like, it was not precision. It's not the best Pivetta outing. I mean, he survived against the Yankees in the Bronx. It was a little bit rainy. whatever. We're going to keep going with Pivetta. I call him a cherry bomb, and he hasn't been that much of a bomb, but it will happen. You know that. Carmen Majinski, 4.2 innings to 2 runs. Hopefully we see Bubba Chandler, like, tomorrow. No, but honestly, this weekend of Bubba Chandler, they will be hosting Atlanta, and Majinski will be going on Sunday. I could very well see him pitching on the 11th, Bubba Chandler. It would not surprise me if he got the call this weekend. If you can still stash Bubba Chandler, you have to do that now. Ryan Nelson against the Mets, 4.1 innings, 2 runs, 3 hits, 4 walks, 2 Ks. I didn't expect anything from this from Ryan Nelson because he's just making the transition to the rotation. If he's going to stick there because Corbin Burns is not on the IL, I don't know. I mean, let's just say that Corbin Burns is. The next start would be the Dodgers anyway for Ryan Nelson, so you don't need to do anything. I took Burns off of the list because I'm just like, you're missing a start. I'm going to make an executive decision that Burns should be missing more time. We will see. And then Ryan Nelson, though, I have to mention, this is a really good four-seamer. He just needs to locate it a little bit better. 53% strike rates are not it. This needs to be like a 70% strike rate in the upper half of the zone because it's 96 with 7 feet of extension, 19 inches of vert, and a flat attack angle. 1.3 height-adjusted VAA. Yeah, right? You're getting that vert with a flatter attack? Oh my gosh. This is why you get those pop-outs and everything, but you just can't go 4 walks, right? And the other aspect of it is he needs to pair it with just anything else that is consistent and not in the same location as a four-seamer. Just play off that tunnel. So yeah, the four-seamer stays there, and that needs to be the foundation, and literally you just aim for the same spot every time, glove middle up, and then you go cutters underneath and then sinkers. Like, oh my gosh. I want to see if I can talk to Ryan Nelson. That'd be really cool. I imagine a lot of people are not trying to talk to him. Ronel Blanco against the Brewers, 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, 6 Ks. He got a very poor quality start against the Brewers. And honestly, the slider was pretty cool. The four seamer was generally effective too. Like, this wasn't nearly as bad as I think the line was. He gets the Reds in Houston next. And that's awesome because the Reds are not a good offense, especially outside of Great American Ballpark. You should be streaming Ronel Blanco there. Miles Michaelis, who's had a really nice little mini run, right? Oh my gosh, I could totally go with Miles Michaelis. No, you can't. 5 innings, 3 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, 1 K. The Pirates, tier 2 offense. One strike. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Yeah, this is Miles Michaelis. Like, stop trying to make Michaelis work. Brady Singer against Atlanta. 6 innings, 4 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. He went 0 for 33 slider whiffs. Brady Singer. What? He hasn't returned a double-digit whiff game on that slider in a long time. And it took last week, and since we've seen one whiff, that's weird. Luis Severino, 5.1 innings of 4 runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a big fan of Severino. I think the cutter is actually pretty cool that he's adding that to his arsenal, but I just don't really think he has that potential of being a real Toby you want to have. He's too strange in my view. And also Mariners are kind of good away from home. And even at home, it's not as bad as it used to be at the tee. So you kind of want to avoid the Mariners a little bit when they're outside of Seattle. Bryce Miller, speaking of Seattle, oh my gosh, 4 innings, 4 runs, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? It's been a very strange season for Bryce Miller as he hasn't really gotten a chance to get into rhythm. He had the back thing last time. Maybe it was still affecting him here. 2 out of 33 whiffs on 24 swings on the four-seamer is kind of wild. He also lost vert on this four-seamer down to like 16 or 17 inches as opposed to like 19. So I don't really think he pitched the worst that we've seen because the fastball, yeah, it was worse, but like overall, the other pitches were fine and stuff. It's just that Bryce Miller is not, he's not really dominating. He's not dominating with the four-seamer first and then everything else is attacking them when they're on their heels, right? So I've had these questions about Bryce Miller for a bit. I just feel like he's not putting the pieces together. And like Brian Wu to me has always been like, oh man, yeah, you are the better pitcher. It's just the health of Brian Wu has been more concerning. And I hate predicting volume. Yeah, but Sandy Alcantara against the Dodgers, last one here. Yeah, this has been a very, very tough run for matchups like Phillies and the Dodgers twice. Yeah, the Reds though, and you should have been much better against the Reds. But Sandy Alcantara has been through this really bad gauntlet. And I had Sandy in the top 50 yesterday. And he goes, what is wrong with you? Like, I wish I had your optimism. He's been so bad. Same kind of thing I was talking about before, guys. Just because Griffin Canning's been really good doesn't mean he's going to be really good. Just because Sandy Alcantara's been really bad doesn't mean he's going to be really bad. What is the thing that we should actually be focusing on? Well, he's throwing 97. That's really good. He also threw a curve at like 85.7 miles per hour. And Sandy Alcantara at that is actually kind of cool because it's not a curve that is a big loopy one. And those generally mean you get low strike rate, low swing rates. But because it actually is more like a 0-0 slider, I love it because it's slower. Guys are geared up for 87 and they see this breaking ball and it's not so slow that they can double swing. They can stop and start again. I think it actually should be really effective. He just couldn't throw strikes with it yesterday. And I think it's a good addition for what Sandy's doing instead of the slider, which is at the same velocity as a changeup, and it's like 90 and stuff, and it's not really slow enough. So now you have three velocity bands of like 85 and 90 and then 97. And I think that's actually a really good thing for Sandy moving forward. And guess what? He gets a nice start next time. The White Sox. You want that. You want that. This is what I was going for. It's like, look, you have Sandy against the Dodgers. I know you're going to bench him for this. But then it's going to be nicer. Then it's going to be easier. He's going to settle into this. You're going to be happy that you have Sandy Alcantara. And let's just forget about everything you know about mattresses. Just expect the future to be better with Sandy Alcantara. We hold on. It's going to be okay. All right. That is it for today's edition of the Plus Pitch Podcast. We are at 9.6 thousand subscribers on YouTube. We're so close. We need 400 subs. Can you get us to 10,000, please? Like, I know a lot of you guys listen to this. You can also just watch it. I do it on YouTube. It's actually a much different experience, and it's pretty cool. You can go off and do that. I do my video breakdowns every single weekday of a pitcher. It's like 5 to 10 minute videos at most, just showcasing how these guys get their outs, give you all the things I know about pitching in the moment. You should definitely go and subscribe, guys. It's the best way to help us out right now. So thank you so much for doing that. And of course, all the ratings and reviews on iTunes. That is it for today. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.